Historical What Ifs. Historical What Ifs.
History hinges on moments so small they could fit in the palm of your hand, yet their consequences echo through centuries and shape the world we live in today. This is Historical What Ifs, where we explore the alternate timelines that could have emerged from a single different decision, a missed opportunity, or a stroke of luck that went the other way. Today's episode examines one of those pivotal moments and traces the extraordinary chain of events that might have followed if history had taken just one small turn in a different direction. Welcome to Historical What Ifs, reimagining pivotal moments. I'm your host, and as always, I'm joined by my esteemed colleague.
It's great to be here. And today's topic is, well, it's the big one. The one that in many ways started it all.
It really is. We're tackling a question that has captivated historians, writers, and thinkers for centuries. What if the Roman Empire never fell?
Just saying it out loud gives me a bit of a chill. It's the ultimate counterfactual. The unseen empire, as we're calling it.
You know, from my perspective as a storyteller, the fall of Rome is one of the greatest third acts in human history. You have these larger-than-life characters, centuries of rising action, a spectacular climax, and then this long, dramatic decline. It's epic. So for me, the question is a narrative one. What happens when the story doesn't end? What does that fourth act look like?
That's a fascinating way to put it. For me, it's less about the characters and more about the source code of Western civilization. Our laws, our languages, our concepts of citizenship and the state. So much of it is built on the foundations of Rome, or in reaction to its collapse. I'm obsessed with the idea of what happens if that central processing unit is never shut down.
Exactly. And that's what we're going to explore. This isn't just about a world with more aqueducts and marble statues. We're going to construct a plausible alternate timeline. How would the last 1,500 years have been different if a centralized Roman authority had persisted?
Think about the ripple effects. Language, religion, technology, exploration. Would a Roman Empire have discovered the Americas? Would its science have stagnated? Or would it have reached the stars? The possibilities are staggering.
So, we invite you to join us on this journey. But before we can build our new world, we first have to understand the old one. Why did Rome fall in the first place? And was its collapse truly inevitable?
That's the fundamental question, isn't it? Because if you can find the pivot point, the moment where one small change could have altered everything, that's where our new timeline begins.
And there are so many potential pivots. You could point to a dozen different moments, but for me, I keep coming back to the late 4th century, specifically the reign of Theodosius.
Ah, Theodosius the Great. That's a complicated one. He's held up as this champion of Christian orthodoxy, the man who made it the state religion. But under his watch, the very nature of the Roman army began to fundamentally change, didn't it?
It really did, and it wasn't entirely his fault. He inherited a disaster after the Battle of Adrianople. But the core problem was stark. He couldn't recruit enough Roman troops. He had to rely on barbarian warbands.
And not just as auxiliary forces on the frontiers, which had been done for centuries. This was different. He was settling them inside the empire.
Exactly. They were given land, a home, along the Danube, but they retained their own leaders, their own military structure. There was no formal treaty, the records are hazy, but it was the first time a foreign people, a whole nation, was allowed to exist as an autonomous entity within the imperial borders.
It's a policy born of pure desperation. The official line was relief, but even the court propagandists admitted these Goths couldn't be kicked out, they couldn't be destroyed, and they couldn't be enslaved. So what other option was there?
Well, that's the billion-dollar question, isn't it? Because that decision directly creates a figure like Alaric. He's not some outsider storming the gates. He's a product of this policy. a Gothic leader who rebels in 391, but a year later, he's accepted as a leader of Theodosius's own Gothic troops.
He wanted a seat at the table. He wanted to be a Roman magister militum, a master of soldiers. His ambition was to rise within the system. The tragedy is that the system was becoming too brittle and too xenophobic to accommodate him.
And at the same time, this is happening on the frontiers. What's going on back in the heartland? In Italy, the court moves to Mediolanum, and the accounts from that time are just staggering.
Oh, the corruption. It's breathtaking. You have Bishop Ambrose of Milan preaching these furious sermons against avarice, aimed squarely at the super-rich landowners.
Because they were making a killing. They were turning agrarian produce into gold, as one of his deacons put it, by supplying the court and the army, while completely crushing the poor who actually grew the food. The social contract was just gone.
It was a court where, quote, everything was up for sale. So you have this hollowed-out core. The financial desperation is so bad that Theodosius has to impose extra levies that cause riots. People are tearing down his statues. He's fighting for his life against powerful usurpers like Magnus Maximus, bleeding the Western army dry in these massive civil wars.
And who's filling the ranks in those wars? More and more barbarians. Goths, Huns, Alans. He's using them to kill Romans. The losses on both sides at battles like the Frigidus were immense, especially among his Gothic federates. And those garrisons, the ones on the crucial approaches to Italy, they were never properly manned again.
So, he dies in 395. He leaves the empire to his two young sons, Honorius and Arcadius, who are, let's be generous, and call them ineffective. And the whole thing splits. For good. You have Stilicho in the west, Rufinus in the east, and they immediately start working against each other. The empire is no longer one man's problem. It's two courts fighting over the scraps of a failing system.
And that split, right there, that's the fatal wound, isn't it? Before we even get to the Vandals or Attila, the body of the empire is already sawing itself in half. The idea that the greatest threat to the Western Empire was the Eastern Empire, and vice versa, it's political suicide.
It's a complete systems failure, and it trickles down. We talk about the corrupt super rich, but what about the average person? There's a religious polemic from around this time that is just devastating. It says people actively wish to flee to the barbarians.
To the Bagaudae. Yeah.
To the Bagaudae. To the Goths. Anywhere. Because, and this is the line that gets me, they preferred the nauseous odor of the bodies and clothing of the barbarians to the injustice rife among the Romans.
Wow. Think about that. The Roman project, the promise of civilization, of law and order, has become so toxic, so predatory, that your own citizens would rather take their chances with people they consider foul-smelling savages. The social contract isn't just broken. It's been set on fire.
And if your own people are that demoralized, what does that say about your army?
Well, we know what it says. There's that incredible passage from Vegetius complaining that the infantry finds the weight of a cuirass and a helmet intolerable.
Intolerable. The very equipment that defined the legionary for centuries. He says it's because they so seldom exercised and rarely put them on. It's not that the technology was lost. It's that the discipline, the will to be a Roman soldier, was just gone.
How can you expect a man to fight for an empire that's crushing his family with taxes? An empire he'd rather flee? So you have these exposed, unarmored troops who are, as Vegetius says, more disposed to fly than fight. It's a crisis of morale that begins long before the final battles are ever fought.
So the entire foundation is rotten. The political class is fighting itself. The economic system is bleeding the populace dry. And the military has lost its edge and its will. It's in that context that the whole Vandal situation in Africa becomes an extinction-level event.
Oh, the capture of Carthage in 439. It's not just losing a province. It's like someone cutting the main artery.
Exactly. Africa wasn't just a province. It was the breadbasket. It fed Rome. More than that, it was a massive source of tax revenue that required very few troops to defend. It was the empire's cash cow.
And Genseric and the Vandals don't just take it. They're smart. They establish a kingdom, they build a navy, and suddenly the Mediterranean, Mare Nostrum, our sea, is no longer theirs. It's infested with Vandal pirates.
And the Roman response is what? They assemble troops in Sicily for a counterattack, but it just fizzles. The Huns attack the east, the troops are recalled, and the opportunity is lost forever. The financial hit is catastrophic. The text says the loss of income was equivalent to the cost of nearly 40,000 infantry.
An army they desperately needed but could no longer afford. And what does the regime do? They have to raise taxes on the provinces they still have, even while admitting the peasantry can't pay anymore. But, and this is the part that's just infuriating, they also protect the interests of the rich landowners who were displaced from Africa, letting them avoid taxes.
Unbelievable. So the rich get tax breaks, while the poor are squeezed even harder to pay for a military that can't even defend them. It's a doom loop. Every crisis just makes the underlying problems worse, which in turn makes them incapable of dealing with the next crisis. It's a downward spiral.
And that doom loop, it's the heart of it, isn't it? It feels so inevitable. Looking back from our vantage point, you see all these threads. The political rot, the economic injustice, the military decay, and they all seem to be weaving one single tapestry of collapse.
It does, but I still wonder, was there ever a point of no return? Or was there one last chance? One last figure who could have, if the dice had rolled differently, pulled them out of that nosedive?
You're talking about Majorian, aren't you?
Of course. The last competent man. He comes to power in 457, and for a brief, shining moment, you think, my God, he might just do it. He tries to reform the tax code to stop the rich from preying on the poor. He issues laws to stop the powerful from tearing down ancient buildings for their private villas.
He even tried to rebuild the navy to take back Africa from the Vandals. He was trying to reverse the very thing that sealed their fate.
And what happened? His own generals, the Roman aristocracy whose power he threatened, they murdered him. That, for me, is the final sentence in the story. The empire had become an organism that rejected its own cure. The fall wasn't an external event. It was an autoimmune disease.
An autoimmune disease. Wow. That's a chillingly perfect way to put it. So our unseen empire, it was never really possible, was it? Not without fundamentally rewriting the DNA of the Roman state much, much earlier.
I don't know if it was impossible, but the cost would have been immense. And I think ultimately what we're left with is this profound sense of fragmentation. The idea that the world we inherited is one built on the shards of something that was once whole. We've spent 1,500 years trying to glue the pieces back together, whether it's through Charlemagne, or Napoleon, or the EU.
And maybe that's the real legacy. Not the fall itself, but the unending search for what was lost. The ghost of Rome that haunts us still.
A ghost that has shaped our world in ways we're still trying to understand. That's our time for today. Thank you for joining us on Historical What Ifs. The butterfly effect of history reminds us that the world we know today is just one of countless possibilities, shaped by moments of chance, choice, and consequence that could have easily gone another way. This has been Historical What Ifs, where every episode reveals how fragile our timeline really is, and how different decisions by our ancestors might have created an entirely different present. Understanding these alternate possibilities doesn't just satisfy our curiosity. It helps us appreciate how remarkable it is that we ended up in this particular version of history.